pain in his shoulder, Dan pulled up both his booted feet and kicked the bastard in the gut as hard as he could. The man went spinning away, arms and legs flailing as he tumbled off into space, dwindling rapidly in the distance. With his usable left hand, Dan made his way from cleat to cleat until he was at the hatch of the control station. The other intruder was inside the dome, his boots hooked into foot loops on the floor, his body half-bent in the simian crouch that people unconsciously assume in zero gravity. The only light inside the dome was from the control board's colored display screens and lighted gauges. Dan saw it reflecting off the intruder's helmet. He was poring over the board, Dan realized, trying to figure out how to disable the controls. Then he pulled a sizable wrench from the tool set at his belt. He's going to smash everything, Dan saw. With a roar that the intruder couldn't hear, Dan launched himself at the man head first, banging into him and sending the two of them bouncing off the curving wall of the tight little control dome. Fresh agonies of pain shot through Dan's right shoulder. Where the hell's the rest of my gang? He wondered as he recoiled away from the intruder. The bastard still had the wrench in his fist, and he pushed off the wall to fly straight at Dan. With a grim smile, Dan realized that this bozo didn't know shit about fighting in zero-G. Flicking his boots against the loops studding the floor, Dan edged sideways, and his attacker sailed right past him and into the other side of the dome. He bounced away, turned an inadvertent somersault, then righted himself and faced Dan again. By now, Dan had moved to the control panel, standing in front of it. "You want to wreck the controls?" he said, knowing the other couldn't hear him. "You'll have to get past me first." The intruder hesitated, hanging weightlessly a few inches above the floor. He threw the wrench at Dan, sending himself into a hopeless spin. Dan caught the wrench in his good hand and hefted it menacingly. "Thanks, pal. Now come on over here so I can give it back to you." But there was a knife in the man's gloved hand now. Dan saw its slim blade glint in the faint light from the control screens. Anchoring one boot in a foot loop, Dan hurled the wrench back at the intruder. The man ducked in reflex action, and the motion started him tumbling again. Dan glided out from behind the foot loop and slipped behind the flailing intruder, locking his legs around the guy's waist and grabbing his knife hand. The two of them bucked and banged off the control board and the dome's curving wall for what seemed like an hour to Dan. At last he heard Adair's voice. "What's going on here, a rodeo?" "Ride him, boss!" "Christ, the sumbitch has got a knife!" All six of Dan's crew jammed into the dome and overpowered Williamson. One of the women ended up with the knife.
"Why don't we just stick this up his ass?" she snarled.
Dan was already at the controls, shutting down the magnetrons. "Uh-uh. We want him alive and able to answer questions." One by one, in swift succession, Dan turned off the magnetrons, poking at the control board with his left hand. A string of red lights sprang across the control board. His right shoulder was flaming with pain now as the adrenaline ebbed out of his blood. "Radio Van Buren and verify that we've turned off the power," Dan said, suddenly so tired and hurting that he wanted to curl up and go to sleep. The Oval Office. The president was livid.
"They tried to kill me," he kept repeating, shouting almost as he paced furiously back and forth behind his huge ornate desk. "Some motherfucking bastards tried to kill me."
The director of Homeland Security had never seen the president so enraged.
"It wasn't just you, Mr. President. More than 600 people have died."
"I don't give a shit. They were after me."
The Secretary of Defense, an old friend and a veteran of many private tirades, just sat on the plush little sofa by the empty fireplace and bided his time. Sitting across from him in the Oval Office were the Secretary of State and the President's National Security Advisor. "We're getting information on what happened," the National Security Advisor said, trying to calm down his president. "Apparently a terrorist group took control of that power satellite up in space."
"Blow it out of the sky," the president snarled, turning to the defense secretary. "We've got missiles. Blast that son of a bitch to hell."
The defense secretary hiked his eyebrows.
"It's owned by an American corporation, Mr. President."
"I don't care. That damn thing is dangerous. Blow it up."
The secretary of state, very aware that she was the only woman in the room,
decided she had to say something. "Mr. President, wouldn't it be better?" But the president ignored her. Pointing at his chief of staff, he said, "Get the Air Force on the line. I'll give the order myself." The chief of staff glanced nervously at the others, then walked slowly across the carpet that bore the great seal of the United States, heading for the president's desk and his telephone console. "There's a team of Americans aboard the satellite," said the director of Homeland Defense.
"Americans?"
the president snapped. "They went up there and grabbed the terrorists. They've shut down the satellite. It's not beaming power anywhere now." The defense secretary asked, "How'd they get up there so quick?" The Homeland Defense director smiled knowingly. "Better than that, we know where the terrorist base is, the ground control base where they directed the satellite." The Oval Office went silent for several moments. Then the Secretary of State asked, "So soon? It's been less than an hour." Almost smugly, the Homeland Defense director pulled a photograph from his inside jacket pocket, walked over to the desk, and placed it in front of the president. "It looks like a house," the president said, settling slowly into his desk chair. "It's a villa outside Marseille."
"That's where the terrorists are?"
"There were two on the satellite itself. The American team from Astro Corporation got them." Tapping a finger on the photo, the Homeland Defense director went on, "But this is where the radio signals that controlled the satellite came from."
"You're certain of this?"
the president's chief of staff asked. "Dead certain." The president looked up from the photo.
"Are they still in there?"
"We've got three different satellites watching. None of the cars parked in that photo have left yet."
"It hasn't even been an hour."
"They're probably dismantling their equipment and getting set to skedaddle," said the Homeland Defense director. The president shifted his red-rimmed eyes to the defense secretary.
"Can you put a smart bomb on that villa?"
The defense secretary smiled tightly. "Which window would you like it to go through?" The national security advisor said,
"But that's in France. Sovereign French territory."
"How quickly can you get it done?" the president asked the defense secretary.
We have a carrier group in the Med. No more than an hour. Maybe a little less."
"Do it!" The secretary of state shot to her feet.
"Mr. President, you can't bomb a building inside a sovereign nation. France, for God's sake!"
"We have an anti-terrorism agreement with them, don't we?"
"Yes, but..."
"You get the French ambassador on the phone and explain it to him."
"Lord knows where he is this afternoon," she said. "It'll take more than an hour to track him down."
"Good. Take your time. And when you get him, explain this to him slowly."
Dan had expected to be angry, to be in a killing rage, as he heard from Van Buren what had happened at Arlington National Cemetery. But once he learned that Jane hadn't been harmed, all the fury leaked out of him. "I'm coming down from an adrenaline high," he told himself. But a voice in his head kept repeating, "Jane's all right. You saved her. She's all right." He sat in the last row of the space plane, his shoulder throbbing painfully, as Adair went through the checklist preparing to break orbit and fly back to Matagorda. In the cushioned seat next to him sat Gilly Williamson, looking exhausted, grimy, totally spent. Like the six others in the cabin, Dan and Williamson were still in their spacesuits, although they had removed their helmets. Makes a big difference, Dan thought, when you can rub your eyes or scratch your nose. Williamson scratched his stubbly chin and stared straight ahead, his eyes focused on some inner demons.
"Sorry we couldn't pick up your buddy," Dan said, keeping his voice low. "He was too far out for us to risk chasing him with the OTV.
Williamson turned his head toward Dan slightly.
"It's okay. He wanted to be a holy martyr anyway."
"And you?" Dan asked. "You wanted to be a martyr too?"
"I already am one, mate."
Dan pondered that for all of a second or two. "You're not Muslim?"
"Not bloody likely."
"Then what's the suicide bit all about?"
"I'm already dead, pal. Cancer. It's just a matter of time."
"So you wanted to go out in a blaze of glory, is that it?"
Williamson smirked at him.
"I've got a wife and kids to support. This was my pension plan."
Comprehension dawned on Dan. "Pension? Really? Tell me more."
"Why the fuck should I?